Frequency Podcast Network. Stories that matter, podcasts that resonate.
So how do you like your interest rates in this economy? The Bank of Canada says it's going to wait to give borrowers a break as it held steady with its decision on interest rates on Wednesday, keeping the overnight lending rate at 2.75% for the second meeting in a row. Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem summarized the decision saying, "They really don't know how badly the economy is going to be hurt or slowed down under the weight of the trade battle with the United States. There's just too much uncertainty," a word that was used several times as the governor discussed the central bank's decision and about how much of a disruption trade is being caused by U.S. President Donald Trump.
"The Canadian economy is softer, but not sharply weaker. And we've seen some firmness in recent inflation data. Against this backdrop, we decided to hold the policy rate unchanged as we continue to gain more information on U.S. trade policy and its impacts. On balance, members thought there could be a need for a reduction in the policy rate if the economy weakens in the face of continued U.S. tariffs and uncertainty and cost pressures on inflation are contained."
Well, as it turned out, less than 24 hours after the policy announcement, there was some hard data, and it was not good. The April trade deficit was the largest on record, $7.1 billion, as the Trump tariffs slammed the brakes on the Canadian auto industry, with car and truck exports to the U.S. plunging close to 23% for the month. And other sectors hit hard as well, and now steel tariffs in effect. The trade results were the first of many that we'll be getting between now and the next Bank of Canada policy decision on July 30th. My name is Mike Eppel, and welcome to In This Economy. Today is a special crossover edition with The Big Story, looking at two things. We'll hear from an expert in the real estate sector. We'll give perspective on the Bank of Canada's announcement on the slowdown that we've seen this spring for the Toronto and Vancouver real estate markets. But first, to talk about whether the central bank should have been preemptive with an interest rate cut, considering we've already seen some anecdotal evidence on the economy struggling with unemployment on the rise, households hampered by rising debts, and a stagnant spring so far for real estate. Joining me is Claire Fan, a senior economist with the RBC. Thank you very much for joining me, Claire.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
The prevailing wisdom going into the Wednesday decision on policy for the BOC was that they were going to do what was known as a dovish hold. They would kind of keep their powder dry, wait for the hard data. But could an argument have been made that, again, should they have been preemptive? Because when so many economists think that the economy is going to slow down, maybe they might want to be ahead of the curve.
Yeah, heading into the meeting, perhaps there is, you know, some arguments. Again, you mentioned the labor report in April. We did see pretty significant job losses, specifically in manufacturing, which is where you would expect job losses to show up, but still pretty substantial, over 30,000 in April. And the unemployment rate climbing to 6.9%. And the Bank of Canada actually mentioned that in their sort of press release. So they are aware, obviously, of the deterioration in the labor market as well as just broader economic backdrop. But I think to sort of their point on uncertainty, it's not only uncertainty with trade policy, it's also uncertainty in terms of how much the existing sort of tariffs have already had an impact on the Canadian economy. So Q1 GDP was actually a bit stronger than they were expecting, but a lot of that was due to tariff front running, which means it's not going to persist. So they are expecting a pretty sharp slowdown in Q2. But at the same time, there's also very high uncertainty as to what inflation will be later down the road this year, which is still their key mandate to keep inflation steady and low. And this is especially true given what's, which has happened over the course of the pandemic after a period of really, really high inflation and the bank's effort in terms of struggling to get that down. So essentially, yeah, it's kind of a tough spot. And they said, it's heightened uncertainty in terms of both, again, with trade policy and reading the data. And it's something that we're struggling with as well.
Well, talking about the inflation a report, and I think we have to really clarify for the listener about, you know, what it is that the central bank is looking for, because you heard that headline for the latest inflation statistics with the elimination of the carbon tax, and Tiff Macklem, the governor, said, look, that that carbon tax relief will show up in the inflation statistics for basically the next 12 months until it filters through. But then you take that out and inflation overall is running at over 2%. And I think that's the key metric that the central bank's looking at, right?
Yeah, exactly. So what they look at is essentially called core inflation measures. And these kind of excludes, you know, food and energy components that are more volatile. Energy is also where sort of the end of consumer carbon surcharges would show up. So excluding that, we did see an upside surprise in April. But the governor, Macklem, also kind of cautioned against reading too much into that one reading because it is just 1 month. But nonetheless, it is an upside surprise. And it is sort of the timing of it, right? Like at the sort of the right when we're stepping into the trade war with tariffs expected to push consumer prices higher still later this year. And they mentioned, you know, consumers are expecting that, businesses are expecting that, and already are pointing to cost increases. So it's just not a particular optimistic backdrop as a starting point, essentially, when it comes to inflation trends.
I guess, you know, one of the commentators I was reading after the policy announcement was made, and again, this focus on uncertainty, which is something that the argument isn't going away. We're going to be uncertain. We've never faced anything like this from an erratic U.S. President and, you know, daily missives on Truth Social and how the parameters change on a moment by moment basis. So under that circumstance, does the rule book on setting policy maybe need to be nuanced to some extent and say, look, we don't, you know, have all of the hard data, but when we see the balance of trade drying up immediately in the month of April, again, a $7 billion trade deficit, and companies and households going to need relief, maybe you want to cut rates. And because, again, the next time the central bank meets is late July, 7 weeks from now, and that's a lifetime under these circumstances.
Yeah, for sure. I think, there's some sort of mention in terms of government or the Bank of Canada policy making decision, which is already highly unusual. So in the press conference, Macklem has sort of talked about how it's, again, very difficult in terms of trying to parse out the exact impact of tariff on the economy, on inflation right now. And he also highlighted Bank of Canada's reliance on what we call soft data and intel, essentially, were anecdotes from businesses. By talking to or conversing with businesses and trying to figure out, you know, how what they're already seeing that may not be showing up in CPI, official CPI data for another 1 or 2 months, right? Mm-hmm. So there is some of that flexibility that's already sort of showing up in terms of what's playing into the central bank's decision-making, which is unusual. And then I say yes. So the environment obviously is still highly uncertain, but there are a couple of things in terms of large trends in sort of the progression over the past couple of months that we've been pointing to that we feel are things that we can say with a certain degree of confidence. One of them being that, you know, Canada back in February from being one of the only countries targeted with very large and very severe tariffs to now being the lowest on the rank when it comes to the rate of tariffs that's attached to each U.S. major trade partner. And we saw that to where we calculated from this morning's U.S. trade data as well. It was around 2.3% in April, which is still higher than near zero back in January. But still, it kind of speaks to the relative ranking and how that plays out for Canada as a trade partner and how important it is for the U.S. So that's number one. And then I think number two is just the broader trade environment. So I think before February, World Liberation Day, there was this escalation, right? Like there were walkbacks as well, back and forth, but it mostly felt like two steps forward, one step back in terms of trade tension. It was mounting. But I think post-Liberation Day, we are getting the sense that maybe things are starting to de-escalate a little bit. We got the trade deals between the US and the UK that didn't amount to much in reality. But then we also got some major de-escalation between the two largest world economies, which will matter for sort of world demand and GDP growth and you know in most countries as well, including Canada. So I think those are some of the things that we've been pointing to broadly as to, you know, just some of the trends that we're observing Which arguably, you know, any amount of tariffs is negative, right? It's prohibitive for GDP growth, is really bad for inflation. It makes decision making so much harder for businesses, for consumers, as well as central banks, like we've seen. But just the direction of where things are heading, I think this is perhaps better than many have feared many months ago.
Now, having said that, though, now we're hit with the 50% tariffs on steel and aluminum, and everybody in that sector is saying, they're immediately calling on the Carney government to retaliate. The feds are saying, yeah, let's see if some trade negotiations in Washington can work some magic. But, you know, that again is another major sector piling on top of the auto industry, which has already seen a pretty dramatic hit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, we don't particularly have a really rosy labor market outlook to begin with. We are expecting some more job losses essentially coming later this year. I mean, we've already, again, seen pretty heavy losses in manufacturing and, you know, related sector, like you said, some of the other sector where specific commodities or products that are hit with tariffs are definitely going to see disproportionate impact.
Yeah. Do you expect here, and again, we're weeks away, and we've got, I think, two job reports, two GDPs, inflation, another round of trades that this, I mean, we're the data deluge over the summer. Typically, summer is supposed to be quiet. It's not this time. July 30th, is it too early to say they're going to definitely cut rates? I think the prevailing wisdom is they cut at least two times this year.
As far as right now, it's also our current base case, which is still, you know, one to two more cuts that we have for the Bank of Canada. But the one thing that I can say for certain is that, you know, their path is highly contingent and, if anything, dictated by sort of the economic weakness that's still expected to show up. Again, we're still expecting the unemployment rate in Canada will climb to over 7%, which is pretty high. And then outside of that, GDP growth is going to be, I mean, we're not expecting a recession in the Canadian economy this year, but it's going to be very, very marginal growth for the rest of the quarters. And, you know, just if that's kind of an outlook, which kind of calls for support and stimulus from the central bank, then yeah, for sure, we think rate cuts will be still sort of in the pipeline. But if, you know, the sort of data tells us otherwise, I mean, we're seeing some amount of resilience in sort of consumer spending, according to our own car spending data that actually showed a pretty substantial rebound in April. And if that trend were to persist, and if job openings started to come back, extending some of the trends that we've seen from early Indeed.com data. So that speaks to upside, which is very optimistic for the economy for the rest of the year. Then that could potentially, you know, speaks to risk for a nearer terminal rate than the one that we're currently expecting.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're not calling for an outright recession. Others are. I guess it's these calculations, they're made in pencil with eraser at this point, aren't they?
Uncertainty is definitely the key word. Uncertainty is even in the world of, you know, economic forecasting. So, yes.
Indeed. Claire Phan, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
Now, Wednesday's decision on interest rates by the central bank coincided with the release of the monthly real estate sales stats for Toronto. And the cloud of uncertainty from trade really showed up in the May sales results, the weakest month of May for the GTA housing market since 2002, with just 6,200 transactions. Prices down 4% from a year ago and new listings continuing to climb. And the numbers out of Vancouver, not much better. Would an interest rate cut at this point even do that much to revitalize the real estate market? To discuss the mood of buyers and sellers, I'm joined by Phil Soper, the president of Royal LePage. Hello there, Phil. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Mike.
Phil, first off, were you surprised in the least that the Bank of Canada held steady on interest rates? And subsequent to that, what's your expectation for any effects, if at all, on the real estate market?
So the consensus, both this time and the previous two times the bank has met, turned out as expected. So no surprise that they held rates steady. The impact on the real estate market has been minimal. And the interesting thing is, I think even if they had, say, taken rates down by another quarter of a point, 25 basis points, the impact would have been minimal. It's not rates that is holding the market back at this time.
Yeah, it's interesting. So is it the uncertainty that Tiff Macklem was talking about so much?
Yeah, we've seen wages and salaries rising well above normal for the last 3 years. Year over year in 25, we're looking at 4.5% wage increases across the economy, and home prices have come down. So we're seeing lower home prices, higher incomes, and mortgage rates are now at a point where you can get a five-year fix for under 4%, which is quite normal. So all the structural pieces of the puzzle are in place. The missing ingredient is consumer confidence.
Isn't that something else? I mean, that comes back to not just financials, but the market psychology. And we've talked about that in the past, how you know, if you're confident about your job and the economy, you're probably willing to go and do the biggest purchase of your life. And if not, well, the opposite is true.
Yeah, consumer confidence is an amazing thing. And buying psychology, if you look at the great surge in interest in housing that occurred post-pandemic, in that late 20 to mid 2022 time frame, there was no real rational reason for that huge surge in transactions and the big bump up in home prices. It was driven by psychology. People felt they needed to improve their housing during that time. It is interesting on house prices that they are now at about the same level as they were in 2019. So that big rise during the pandemic has been erased. And, you know, in the meantime, people are they're richer. Savings are higher and incomes are higher than they were back 5 years ago.
Well, we are coming off, like, I guess the May data from Treb this week. I mean, they had it at the lowest month of May since something like 2002. And all we've heard about prior to all this, Phil, has been about a lack of housing, a lack of affordable housing, yes, but even new properties that are being built, those aren't being purchased. I mean, if you want to have a gauge of consumer confidence, that right there is it.
Yes, and it is not unique to Toronto, because Vancouver is experiencing this same rigor mortis or deer caught in the headlight kind of situation. But if you look in major cities across the country, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Montreal, Halifax, activity levels are higher. Home prices are rising, not by much, call it mid-single digits. But the two expensive markets in the country, definitely things are, they've ground to a halt.
Yeah. And you know, we've heard a lot of talk about housing affordability, obviously, at the federal level and building and the back and forth. Well, if you want to build more houses, does that bring down the equity value of current property owners? And you can have that debate. But at the same time, it doesn't even seem to affect what the market is doing in the here and now. Is it as simple as getting some clarity on trade and getting that overhang of tariffs out of the way before we start to see a recovery?
Yes. You know, we're expecting continued uncertainty through mid-year. And the recent jobs data that came out of the U.S. Was pretty soft, much softer than we're seeing in Canada, which I think should trigger more pressure on the executive branch in the U.S., on President Trump, to get some of this trade uncertainty pushed to the side. So we are expecting and building into our planning an uplift late in the third quarter. So we're not expecting positivity through the summer in the market. You know, if you are a buyer, the good news is you're not going to see a lot of competition. You're probably going to get a deal, if you want to put it that way. But for those people who just can't get over the the problem or the mentality of doing a big transaction in this era of trade uncertainty. Later in the year does look like it probably will see a rebound in housing.
Outside of Toronto, and you go back to, you know, what certain towns and cities were doing during the peak of the pandemic, we saw some big run-ups in prices, obviously, Phil. Do you think that people in those markets are going to need a bit of a rethink that what they were expecting in price for sales then, the new reality is much different?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, a price of a home, if you look at the Roller Page benchmark prices, you can get about two of the benchmark detached homes in Calgary for one in Vancouver or Toronto. So home prices in our smaller cities are considerably less. Like Montreal, for example, be about 40% of the price of a home. So it seems as the value of property goes up, people's anxiety about completing a transaction when there's uncertainty is higher, because the reality of jobs and trade uncertainty is no different in Montreal than Toronto. Both markets rely on trade and exports. Yet the Quebecers seem to be able to manage it with their much lower home prices.
Are we seeing as much migration city to city? We saw a lot of that in 2024. Calgary was a hotspot. Alberta in general. Is that as big of a thing this year?
Yeah, we're continuing to see people migrate out of the Lower Mainland to British Columbia, call it Greater Vancouver, and out of Southern Ontario into Alberta and to Atlantic Canada to a lesser extent, but not at the levels we saw immediately post-pandemic. So it slowed a bit, but it's still happening. Now, I should put it in perspective. Compared to the inflow of new Canadians, even with reduced immigration levels, the interprovincial migration numbers are quite small.
We've heard also a lot of talk this year about the great mortgage reset. What are we seeing in the sales? You know, are people, anybody being forced to sell? Are there much powers of sale properties coming on the market? Or is that something that Canadians, you know, the basic belief is the last thing you're going to miss a payment on is your mortgage. You know, has that started to show up in the actual data?
The doom and gloom that some had forecast for the mortgage market just has not materialized. We remain at very, very low default rates. I think the American default rate on mortgages is approximately 18 times higher. We're sitting at about 3/3100ths of 1%, so 0.3 of 1% of people aren't able to meet their obligations to your bank, which is among the lowest in the world. So the mortgage book in Canada is still being managed very well by the big banks, by our mortgage insurance firms, and people who do run into trouble are being offered lots of flexibility in terms of staying in their homes. And I think that works out overall. It helps the housing market. It helps banks, obviously, but it does underpin consumer confidence. Now, if we had a spike in unemployment and there was a spike in mortgage default rates, not related to the rollover from the pandemic era low mortgage rates, but related to unemployment, that could change the situation. But again, our outlook is for a lift at the end of the year and not the continued doom and gloom we're seeing here in the late spring.
Yeah, I wonder if the fact that mortgage rates have come off the peak and are more at a moderate level, comparatively speaking, if that hasn't helped alleviate some of the pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. Mortgage rates at as low as 3.8 percent for a 5-year fixed are lower than the 25-year average. They're similar to what people were paying in the 2000s, a little bit higher than the post-financial crisis. If you look at the longer term, absolutely not a deterrent on the market at all, not a drag. Now, that said, we are expecting that the weak mid-year economy will drive the bank to reduce rates further. We're expecting by the end of the year another 50 basis points, half a percentage point off these rates. So combined with some trade certainty, if there are some actual deals put in place, the market is primed to rebound, I would say strongly, yet we haven't seen much strength in our big markets this year. So call it modestly.
Well, we'll leave it on a somewhat optimistic note. Thanks. Okay. Thanks for joining me, Phil.
No problem at all, Mike. Hope you're enjoying the summer. Cheers.
And my thanks to Phil Soper, president of Royal LePage, for joining me today on In This Economy and The Big Story. Also to Claire Fan, senior economist at the RBC. You can follow us on X at The Big Story FPN. My handle on social media is at Eppman, Eppman. You can also send me comments by email at mike.epple@rci.rogers.com. You can listen to The Big Story, In This Economy, and other frequency podcasts on our Seeker app. That's Seeker. My name is Mike Epple. Thanks for listening.